I'm well aware that I stand between you and cocktails. So I'm going to try to make this snappy. How many people in here have ever had a negative reaction to a fragrance of any sort? Yeah, most people report that they have at some time or another had a negative reaction to a fragrance. So I am going to talk about fragrances and work-related asthma. And you know how sometimes you smell a smell and it brings back all kinds of memories that are really specific, or it conjures up a specific emotion? And that's because the olfactory receptors in our brain are connected to the parts of the brain that are responsible for emotion and memory. So smell is one of those senses that really can bring those things back to us. And there's a long history in humankind of people using fragrances for different purposes. The use of fragrances dates back, you know, to 4000 BC, and the Egyptians and the Chinese used incense and perfume and other kinds of things for fragrances for different purposes. In Europe in the 14th century, people started making perfume in kind of a more modern way, and about 500 years after that, they started making it primarily from synthetics, from chemicals, instead of from things that they just found in nature, which we'll come back to in a sec. One important point related to this is that 20% of the perfume industry, and I would say fragrance industry would be a better way to put that, is focused on perfuming people, and the other 80% is really focused on perfuming the environment, whether it's you know, a plug-in or other kinds of air fresheners, or applying fragrance to lots of different products that then get into our environment. When we look at fragrance chemicals, in the olden days, there were a lot of natural things used. You can see some of them listed up here. Not things that I would necessarily think of as sweet-smelling ingredients for perfumes, but those were the kinds of things that are still used, in fact, even now in modern perfumes. But these days, we're more often seeing volatile chemicals used in fragrances. They get into the air, and we can smell them. And there's well-documented respiratory effects for a lot of these chemicals that we find in fragrances. Studies have shown that there are up to 300 different ingredients in an individual fragrance, and none of them need to be disclosed on a label. There are no disclosure requirements. If a product even says fragrance, they don't have to say anything else about it. The industry group, the International Fragrance Association, has a website where you can look up and see all the ingredients that all of their member companies have reported as being in the fragrances that they produce, and there's over 3,000 chemicals listed right now. And in workplaces, which is what this will be about, we're mostly thinking about both the direct application of a fragrance, like in an air freshener, as well as the indirect experience of a fragrance, meaning it's on a coworker or on a customer or a client. There are many different kinds of chemicals in fragrances, including a big list of irritants, a lot of VOCs, aldehydes, phenols, etc., that you can see here. And equally important for this talk is that there are a lot of asthmogens listed on that IFRA list. Asthmogens are chemicals that have been shown to be capable of causing new asthma in people that haven't had it before. So they're especially important to think about in terms of preventing new asthma in people. But this list that you see here, eugenol, styrene, et cetera, those are all asthmogens that we found on the IFRA list of chemicals that are included in fragrances. In addition to that, from a respiratory perspective, chemicals with carbon-carbon double bonds like terpenes also can react with ozone and form secondary pollutants like formaldehyde and also ultrafine particles. And that's been an issue in a lot of papers about cleaning chemicals, but it's also an issue here in terms of fragrances. There have been a few studies that not just looked at what's in products, but took a look at what they're actually emitting. Bartsch et al. Tested 44 products, and they found over 300 different fragrance chemicals And some of them had up to 72 different chemicals in a product. And eugenol, which I showed a second ago as an asthmogen, was found in 1/5 of the products that they tested. Other asthmogens, including styrene and acetic acid, were also found in their tests. Steineman et al. Also did a similar study, and they measured 25 different fragrance products and what came off of them, and they found 133 different VOCs, and they ranged from 6 to 20 different VOCs coming off each product. And they also found asthmogens, different ones. They found carine and formaldehyde. And then, I don't know how you say this, Ude, I'll guess, and Schultz, did another study, and they measured emissions specifically from room fragrance products like air freshener, and they found 108 chemicals, including these 4 asthmogens. So these are products being deliberately applied to room air. So we in California have been funded by NIOSH since 1993 to do work related to asthma surveillance, along with 4 other states, many of whom I see are represented in this room. In California, we use 4 different data sources. We use doctors' first reports of occupational injury or illness, emergency department data, patient discharge data, and workers' compensation data. And together, those identify about 900 potential new cases of work-related asthma a year. And after we've deduplicated them, we end up confirming about 600 new cases of work-related asthma that haven't been identified before each year. We do a follow-up telephone interview or review medical records or both for every case that we find. We try to. And in the course of the initial report and that follow-up effort, we record information about exposures, occupation and industry, as well as other variables around occupation and non-occupational risk factors. We use standard methods for coding the data for industry and occupation, and we also use a standard coding system to record up to 6 different exposures for each case. The case definition that we use is the standard one used for all the NIOSH work-related asthma states, a healthcare provider diagnosis that's consistent with asthma, as well as a temporal association between their symptoms and work. And then we classify cases into new onset cases, meaning they haven't had asthma before, or at least they haven't had it for 2 years prior to the job where their first work-related asthma incident has occurred. Work aggravated asthma, where someone has pre-existing asthma and it's exacerbated by conditions in the workplace. And then this category of confirmed but not classified. And those cases are ones where usually where we can't reach them for interview and there's not enough information in the medical records to determine if their asthma is new or old, but we can confirm that it is a work-related asthma case. We defined our fragrance cases using the Association of Occupational Environmental Clinic codes. That's how we do all of our exposure coding. And we used the code for perfume and the code for air freshener. And I should clarify that perfume was coded, it wasn't so strict that it was just, you know, perfume applied to your wrist. If someone reported that their asthma symptoms were associated with say a coworker's lotion that smelled, you know, was very fragranced, that got recorded as perfume. We don't have a code for lotion, for example, or shampoo. So this, you could think of it more as perfumed body products, I think would be a better way to think of that. So of the over 7,000 cases that we identified over a 20-year period here, almost 6,900 of them were non-fragrance cases, and we had found 270 cases associated with fragrance per that definition that I just showed you. Almost all of those were perfume cases. 242 of them were perfume, another 32 were air freshener, and then 4 of those that I just described, they actually reported both perfume and air freshener. And while 270 cases may not sound like, you know, a big chunk when you're talking about 7,000, perfume was the 9th most common exposure for this time period among all of our cases. So it is an important exposure, at least in our data. So we looked at fragrance, comparing fragrance cases with non-fragrance cases by sex, and you can see there's a disparity here in that the blue bars, which are the fragrance cases, 94% of the fragrance cases were among women versus 62% of the non-fragrance cases. And you know, I don't have a good explanation for that. Certainly more women wear perfume, that's a documented thing. You could go on with other, you know, hypotheses. More women have asthma and therefore they can be exacerbated more. We're also more likely to have a successful interview with a woman. In general, women respond to our interviews more than men, so that we're also more likely to know that fragrance is their exposure because we've interviewed them. You know, it's, all those reasons are possible explanations. I should say before I go on to age, there was no difference between fragrance cases and non-fragrance cases by either race or ethnicity. They were the same. But there was a difference by age, and the median age for the fragrance cases was 48 years old, and the median age for the non-fragrance cases was 42. You can see the cutoff seems to be kind of at about 40. Cases younger than 40 were more likely to be the non-fragrance cases, and the fragrance cases tended to be over 40, and that there was a statistical significantly difference there. When we looked by case classification, again, there was a significant difference. Fragrance cases were more likely to be work aggravated cases. But to me, the piece of this that jumps out as important is that they were equivalent in terms of the proportion that were new onset. And that's important because I think fragrance exposures, and including this is from what our cases have told us when we've interviewed them, fragrance gets dismissed as a not important exposure. People don't believe people have people who don't get symptoms from fragrances don't believe other people who say that they do. But this data shows that, in fact, fragrance or non-fragrance cases are the same in terms of what proportion of them are new onset asthma in our database. And so I think that's an important finding. This is just looking at some of the non-occupational risk factors. This fragrance cases are higher than non-fragrance cases for allergy and for family history of asthma, and that's the same also for work aggravated cases, so that might explain that. This table illustrates, this is just showing the occupational categories where there was a significant difference between fragrance and non-fragrance cases. So the top six categories, or is it five, are the blue ones, are the categories where fragrance cases were more likely to be in those categories. So you can see those are basically education, teachers type of jobs, and health jobs, and office jobs. All indoor jobs, I would point out, office or inside types of jobs. And then the bottom seven are where non-fragrance cases had a higher proportion in these occupational categories. And you can see a lot of these are, in fact, outdoor jobs, protective services, building maintenance, landscapers, agriculture, construction, installation, repair, and maintenance, and as well as manufacturing and transportation. This table just shows some of the specific job titles that that other one was categories, and this just shows the specific titles that had five or more cases, and it also shows the proportion of workforce that is female in these different jobs, and they do tend to fall in female-dominated jobs, and again, that may be just because people who wear perfume more or who are working inside more. We don't know. Impact is an important thing to talk about for fragrance cases. I didn't put it on here, but there's no difference between fragrance and non-fragrance cases in terms of the number of ER visits or the number of hospitalizations. Those were the same. And they still have symptoms, they're still exposed, and yet you can see that workers' comp was denied disproportionately, significantly so, for fragrance cases. which goes back to what I was talking about before. I just wanted to share a couple of case reports with you to just illustrate kind of what it's like for people who are experiencing this kind of work-related asthma on the job. So this is a 27-year-old woman. She'd worked at a hospital for about 6 years as a receptionist. She was diagnosed with asthma in childhood. She'd had it her whole life. It never went away. And one day a coworker sprayed citrus-scented air freshener that had been provided by the hospital in the radiology office where the patient worked. And very quickly, within just a couple of minutes, the patient's asthma flared and she needed a breathing treatment. Her doctor took her off regular work for the week and required her to work in a different location. And in fact, 5 other people in her office experienced symptoms due to this air freshener and had to leave the building, but she was the only one with asthma symptoms. After this incident, she had to increase her existing medications as well as add a new one to control her asthma. So that's case one. So that was a work aggravated case. I also have, this is a RADS case, a new onset case from an irritant exposure. And this is a 31-year-old woman who'd worked for a large school district as a middle school special ed assistant. She'd been in that job for 2 years. She had no previous history of asthma. She was a non-smoker. One day, a student repeatedly and deliberately sprayed Axe body spray. I don't know if any of you have middle school age sons, but Axe body spray is something they use in her classroom, and she immediately developed difficulty breathing. And since then, she's been to the emergency department 4 times, and she's been to urgent care 10 times for her asthma. And nefariously, her students now, this is what she reported to us, now spray body spray when they know they're about to have a test in order to postpone or cancel the test. And when we talked to her, the school had just implemented a no body spray policy for students. And she reported that they mostly follow it. She filed a workers' comp claim and it was accepted. Just to show you that we're not the only ones documenting Axe body spray as having important ramifications for health, these are 2 news stories about buildings being evacuated and stuff from Axe body spray being sprayed. I'm going to skip that one for time. So there are some limitations of our data. We know that our data are underreported. We know that at least, some efforts we've done to try to evaluate our capture, we know that we could be missing up to 2/3 of the actual work-related asthma cases that are happening. Fragrance sensitivity is a very controversial topic. It pits personal choices about people's bodies and beauty with office safety. And when we have been talking about it, we liken it almost to the old cigarette smoking policies, where it was like, but it's my right to smoke, but it's not, I shouldn't have to smell your smoke. It's kind of the same sort of issue. Non-sensitive individuals question symptoms often. And so we also wonder if fragrance cases in particular are underreported for all of those reasons. Also, many general exposures that are in our data set, including cleaning products and other things, actually could be the fragrances in those products, not the other chemicals in the products. There's not really a way for us to know, but many of those products used in a workplace do have lots of fragrance in them. Also, as I mentioned, we're more likely to be successful at interviewing women, and so that could somewhat influence the number of cases that we get that are women in our fragrance cases. So we feel this is an extremely important and sort of under-discussed topic in the sense that we're really talking about indoor chemical exposures. We found cases both of new onset and work aggravated asthma. It's not just work aggravated asthma that we see. And the new onset cases represent a particularly important opportunity for prevention, meaning if we were to stop those fragrance exposures in a workplace, we're stopping new cases of asthma. Fragrance cases, in spite of having similar impacts and outcomes, get their workers' comp claims denied more often. And that's something that doesn't seem right. So how can we prevent it? Well, fragrance-free policies are a good start, and there are examples of those, and there are examples of fragrance-free policies in workplaces that are effective. Enforcement is always an issue. We did have several cases tell us that their workplaces had fragrance-free policies, but they weren't enforced, and their exposures happened anyway. Purchasing policies are another way that primary prevention can happen. By buying things like cleaning products and other things that are fragrance-free, certainly that can limit fragrance exposures. There are, of course, problems with that in terms of ingredients disclosure, because you can't tell what's in there. And even products labeled fragrance-free, there's no guarantee that they actually are. They can still have specific chemicals in them that they add to get rid of scents and things, and there's nobody who actually regulates if something is truly fragrance-free if it's labeled that way. So education for employers and employees is another step that we can take, because many people are just unaware that the fragrances they are wearing or that they apply to different places could be affecting people's health. Improved ventilation is another thing that could help. Clearly, full disclosure on a label, that's something that, at least for cleaning products, there's been attempts at legislation about that. And I think in personal care products, too, there have been some attempts, at least in California, to get fragrance ingredients disclosed, but they haven't been successful. But we think of it really like any other workplace chemical exposure. We wouldn't allow someone to just go spray benzene into the office air, or styrene, or formaldehyde, or eugenol. And so it really shouldn't be any different for fragrances that are used in personal body or cleaning agents. So we have, to address this problem, written a couple of fact sheets. They're on our website. One is for employers, and one is a lower literacy fact sheet for employees, and they're now translated into Spanish and Chinese. So those are available for anybody to use. And we have also come up with a model fragrance-free policy that's also on our website, and it's in Microsoft Word. And that's so that an employer can just download it and change it to be whatever they're comfortable with. So it's a start for them to make a fragrance-free policy that they want for their workplace. Also, just to mention, we've written a manuscript on this topic, and we just found out like 2 hours ago that it's been approved by our department, so that'll be going into the, hopefully be published shortly. So we're hoping that any of these strategies would make some difference to prevent what we think is an important exposure for work-related asthma. Any questions? Tish?
Yeah, no, it's great. One of the things in our workplace is that did you ever do the analysis stratifying by the personal body product versus the cleaners or the environmental fragrances versus the body product? Because there's different policy issues in the workplace.
Well, the cleaners are an entirely different. We have cleaners coded as cleaners, not as fragrances. Is that what you mean? Fragrances
How
and cleaners?
How would you say that, I mean, a lot of the cases you know.
They're either air.
Air fresheners. Yes.
There's only 30 cases of, I mean, we could look and see if there's differences there, but it's a very small number of air fresheners and a very large number of perfume.
It'd just be interesting, because it's so complex. We have, like, this is a union negotiated issue in our workplace, and it has the personal body product. And so it'd be, the fact that you see new onset asthma, but it'd be great to link it even more tightly by taking out the 30 cases for us.
We could easily look at them.
It's really important work.
Martha?
So I was just wondering about enforcement of this. So, okay, you have this policy, but what do you do when someone doesn't go along with it? I mean, do you fire them, or what's the enforcement exactly?
I mean, I think that's up to every employer, right? There's no regulation about it. So, but well,
my personal example, I commuted from Oakland to Sacramento for 7 years. So I was in the van with 14 people, and one of the people who showed up for a while was a guy, actually, who wore the cologne, which is impossible. We had two people who got rid of the sick. So they actually
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you handled that particular instance. I mean, people reported to us when we interviewed them, a lot of them who said, or at least several of them said, that if there it hadn't been enforced and they got sick, that then, like, now it was being enforced. Like, they had to go to the emergency room, and that made it clear that it needed to be enforced. So we didn't have anybody say, like, no matter what I do, these people just keep, you know, wearing perfume and I keep getting sick. It seemed like most of the time, if there was a fragrance-free policy, with a few exceptions, they felt like it made a difference. Yeah. Absolutely. A number of our cases were from other perfumey personal care products. And I would think, like, dryer sheets, it wouldn't be really any different for those things.
So would that be consumer product safety?
I mean, I can't imagine. I don't know. What do you think anybody would ever regulate? It's such a, still like a, other than a disclosure, for sure. But it's tricky because if you, for instance, you can have, the other problem is you can have a workplace with a fragrance-free policy for workers, but if you serve the public, you have very little, I mean, I know that, like, I'm a Kaiser patient, and every time I have an appointment, I get a notice, please don't wear any fragrance products to your appointment. So, like, there are certain situations where you can make an attempt to control that, but if you work in a bank or you work where just the public are coming up to you all the time, I think that's very difficult to control. Dave?
Jennifer, first of all, I really think it's great that you have a model of fragrance-free policy and would encourage a lot of kids to adopt it. So I wanted to say that in the first place. The second thing I want to say is to be a little skeptical about this and to ask sort of where you have some cases that have been very vigorously evaluated looking for a work attribution. So the reason why I say that is, you know, I've had at least, I don't do clinical practice anymore, but I know in my past experience, fragrance was, you know, associated with asthma. There was a lot of very careful evaluation. Sometimes those people actually do have asthma and it's objectively, you know, verified, et cetera, but sometimes they have vocal cord dysfunction. And, you know, there's a whole different treatment pathway for that. And, you know, there's a whole conjuring of a lot of issues with vocal cord dysfunction, that's cause and other things. So it'd be really great to sort of see where there's really well, that clinically, cases that were very well, you know, clinically evaluated such that you can really sort of say, yes, this is a causal agent for asthma. Maybe it's in the Canadian literature, maybe it's somewhere else. But, you know, I thought it'd be great to have that background to make sure to sort of push this with really solid clinical evidence.
I can tell you on I'll give you one example, but yeah, I agree with you. And I think especially because there's so much skepticism about it, too. But the case that we have in the article is in fact a case where, I mean, it was just a coincidence. It was this great case. We got the medical records and it was Bob Harrison who had seen the patient. That was just a coincidence, but he actually did a pretty thorough, he didn't do a specific inhalation challenge test, but he did everything else. And so that's written in there. That's the case report that's in this article, and it's got a lot of clinical support for it. Peggy?
Did you talk to anybody from the asthma program at NCBH? Because I know they addressed fragrance a couple of years ago, and they may have some knowledge, you know, about policies and other things that could add.
No, that's good to know. We didn't. Barbara?
So what do you think can be done to address the denial of workers' comp claims for
I don't know.
Part of the emphasis
is
to
publish. Yeah, publishing the data is the first.
Dave has an idea, I think.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of cases in the Washington workers' comp system are rejected. And, you know, it's really complicated because there's certain evaluations that are just incredibly inadequate. So on some level, it's the assertive
I have to temper that finding a little bit too, because that's self-reported. That's from our interview. Did you file for workers' comp and was your claim accepted? We know that it's like fuzzy, because some people don't even know if their claim was accepted or not, if they just had medical, for example. But I don't know why it would be different for fragrance cases and non-fragrance cases. Yeah. That part, the fuzziness, you think would be.
Even more, I mean, there's actually different definitions of how to do something. So, for example, I'll go to about tomorrow, is that sometimes work has to be the cause. In other words, a more protective way to account for more than 50% of the reason why this person is bad. Versus in Washington, a more liberal workers' comp paper, it has to be a contributing cause, which means that actually we are claiming more easily accepted in Washington relative to other states, maybe say Michigan or Florida.
Ken?
So I think we're missing the point why individuals don't get workers' comp. If you have an entity, you have asthma, and asthma is known to be exacerbated by any type of irritant, fragrance, odor. That's clear, well accepted in the medical literature. You then have this other group of people who have what's, quote, multiple chemical sensitivity. And that is a condition that is dismissed by the medical literature. So, you know, how, what Dave was talking about, how somebody is documented. So if a patient comes to me and says, fragrances bother me at work, and I don't do anything and just say, oh, you have asthma from that, and I don't document it, in my mind, that shouldn't get approved in workers' comp. I mean, it's there are ways to document it, and it's mixing those multiple chemical sensitivities in that is why people get dismissed. It's not the asthma being actually aggravated, it's the multiple chemical sensitivity cases that get mixed into the system.
Do you mean that there are multiple chemical sensitivity cases included in our asthma people, or do you mean in more
know,
like
never,
in the,
we never know that,
in the mind?
It gets back to, you know, how much confirmatory testing, and I know you don't have it, nobody has it, none of the states have it, and, but that would get back into why many of them may not get workers' comp, because they may not really have asthma. They may not really have work aggravated asthma, even though that's how it gets in.
Thanks, everybody.
Well, thanks to all the speakers, and let's head out to the reception.